Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to the next round. The pairings are up, and my opponent this round is quite the unique one. I have sitting across from me the man who is probably even now stocking up on provisions and building a very impenetrable wall for the next few days from the darkest depths of Wizards of the Coast. Worth Walpert is with me. Worth, how are you?
Hey, Chris. I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. Just a quick and easy one to start you off. The correct place to put your lands is...
in the front, obviously. The only place. Unless you're some kind of heathen.
I don't know why anyone else would play them anywhere else. It's just so wrong.
Sophisticated Magic players, they go in front.
Obviously. Hall of Famers even back us up on this. We have powerful support. So, what a lot of people might not know, apart from being the Magic Online guy, is what your actual job title is.
Well, my job title is technically Director of Product Development for Magic Online. It's a lot like an executive producer in a lot of ways in sort of the video game space. A lot of game companies set themselves up differently. What executive producers actually do, a lot of them have teams of 70 people. Some of them have teams of 5 people. My team's on the smaller side. My organization's actually only 4 or 5 people big. We have an open chair and 4 people at the moment. So many of them you know. Probably all of them you guys know. Mike Turian and Chris Kiertz work for me, and Lauren Beauregard, who does a lot of our messaging stuff kind of behind the scenes. She works on Mike's team.
Okay. And so with that job title, what does a day typically look like for you?
A lot of it is pretty standard product development type stuff. I own the P&L. I own the customer experience, like what features we deliver when and what we prioritize when, how we triage bugs, that kind of stuff. So that, as far as the current live operations of the living system, that is me and my team who handle sort of prioritizing, you know, what obviously we have to list as long as our arm. We have to tell the development group that we work with what to fix when. And so, like you guys can imagine, you guys know as much as any who where our problems lie with Magic Online. And so we're the ones who sort of arbitrate where and how those things get fixed and in what order. On the future, that's the current stuff. And that's what Mike and Lauren handle a lot of that. And so I help them, you know, do their work and prioritize and move roadblocks out of their way so they can get their work done. And on the future side, Chris Kiritz is sort of, Lee Sharp, I guess I should say, is also like a de facto member of my team. He does a lot of our business intelligence stuff, but he also has a foot in the product management camp. So him and Chris Kiritz have been working more on like the future of MITGO and stuff I really can't tell you guys much about, other than I know you mentioned leagues. Chris and Lee are both hard at work on, you know, what we build into leagues, how we build them out, what they look like when they come back, what they're, you know, how much they're going to cost, all that kind of stuff. So kind of defining the player experience within, products that have yet to be, in most cases, have yet to be announced.
Wow. So, and that's just a typical day.
Yeah, it's mostly, honestly, you know, when you get to be director at a company the size of Hasbro Wizards, a lot of your day revolves around, I think I mentioned before, shoving Roblox out of the way so that your team can do their work. I give very high-level strategy guidance to my team and then kind of let them handle the how. Like, I guess I work with a lot of folks who are here are ex-military, and they tell me, like, a lot of what we do at our level is where a general would take, you know, take that hill. They don't tell you you need to take this weapon and that weapon and this many people and go this route or whatever. They just say, I want that hill, and then it's up to you to kind of figure out how you take it. That's right. A pretty good analog for what I do. And then also, like I said, shove roadblocks out of the way of my people and give them the tools they need to succeed.
So we can just call you General Worth from now on? Is that cool?
I didn't mean to imply that I was the general. I kind of wish some days that I was. I only, like I said, my team's only 4 people. So we used to be organized a little bit differently, but a few years ago we switched to this current model, and you know, we have a very cross-functional matrixed relationship here within Wizards. So you know, the development group is in a completely different structure, and we have to work with our cross-functional partners to get things done that we want done as the sort of owners of the product and consumer experience. We're ultimately responsible to you guys for what we're delivering, so we need to make sure that our partners here within Wizards are working on the right stuff.
Sure. Yeah, and obviously the customer being the end point is the most important thing. If we can just rewind a little bit, some people might not realize that You've actually got at least one Pro Tour top eight before you went behind the wall, so to speak.
At least one. That's kind. No, it was actually only one. Although I flirted with it many, many times before that. I was the boy. I don't know how many top 16s I had. It was a lot. I kept knocking on the door and couldn't quite crack it. And then LA rolled around. LA was you know, in retrospect, very kind to that. My Tumult team was dead guys: Pakula and Dave Price, Tony Tsai, Dave Bartlow, and John Finkel, eventually Finkel, we sort of added him later.
just sort of added the best player ever.
Yeah, he was probably, to be fair to John, he was probably already the best player ever when we added him. But it was certainly much earlier in his career. Anyway, yeah, the boat, the Queen Mary, it was always very good to us. That was my first and only top eight in Breakthrough. It was a really fun top eight. It was me and John and Steve OMS and, that was a very talented top eight. Chapin and Mike Long and Sven Geertsen, Terry Lau. I forget there's the eighth guy's name, but really, really good top eight. And John smashed me in the semifinals, which is unfortunately for me on YouTube for all to see, at least part of it.
I hope your lands are in front, though, at least.
They are. Of course they are.
Excellent. So what led you behind the wall then? How did you get to be taken on by Wizards?
It's a little bit of a convoluted story, honestly. I went to Penn State for my undergrad, and I was a manager on the guys' varsity basketball team. So I've loved sports my whole life, played football in high school. And so I graduated Penn State knowing several of the athletes, some of them tangentially, and I thought that I wanted to be a sports agent. I took a year off or so to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. Then I realized I had to go to graduate school and get my MBA. To be a sports agent, you generally need an MBA and a JD because it involves a lot of contracts and obviously a lot of business stuff. So within my first year, just completed my first year of MBA, I had taken the LSATs with the intention of applying to law schools, and Wizards had come calling. And at the time, first conversation was in 99. And they were just starting up. MLB Showdown had already been started, and then they were in talks to do NBA and NFL Showdown. And at the time, sort of the mainstream geekiness that we all enjoy today, that I think was truly cracked open by the wild success of the Lord of the Rings franchise of all things, hadn't happened yet. And so the Venn diagram of people that knew card games well and also really, really loved sports was fairly small. And so they knew that I knew how to play Magic, obviously, and I talked with Mark Rosewater and Scap Elias and a ton of the Wizards people throughout my, because I'd been on essentially every Pro Tour from Pro Tour 3 on, and they sort of said, hey, do you want to come work on Magic and sports games? And I said, can I finish my MBA? And they said, no. So you make a decision. And so I did. And here I am 14 years later.
Okay. So 14 years you've been there now.
Yeah, 2000, May or June of 2000 I started.
So you can't be far behind like Helen and Mark and the others who've been there forever.
No, I'm not far behind. But honestly, you know, you'd think 14 years would make me an elder here. I guess it does. I mean, there's not a ton of 14-year people, but I'm nowhere near the oldest. I mean, it's I think Mark's 17, 18 years, maybe even 19 years. I don't know. A long time. Many of the R&D guys, that group is full of lifers. Palen's certainly been here longer than I have. I guess I'm probably in the top 10% or 20%, but certainly not near the top.
So when did you move over to Magic Online?
I spent first 7 years, so through, or 6 years, through September of 06, I think, in R&D making Magic cards and working on our license games. I've worked on pretty much every license game we ever made in here. I worked on from Shaolin Showdown to Star Wars to Looney Tunes to all the sports games to Narnia to a whole bunch of other stuff. So in September, I went up to Brand proper and learned about marketing plans and media buys and really traditional sort of standard Brand 101 type stuff. And I was, one of the first things I did up in Brand actually was my project was they said, look around and see if there's something you can improve. I said, I noticed the fat pack construction. I don't know if you even remember what the fat packs used to be built like back in the day. They had two boxes with them and they didn't have as many packs and people just didn't kind of like them as much and they cost us a ton to make and it just wasn't a product that was resonating very well. So one of my first things I did up there was sort of remake the Fat Pack, and it's actually almost exactly like I did it. The remade design is still hanging on till this day, so it's probably the right thing to do. But then, so I spent a couple years there, and then in 08, I moved to work on the business side of Magic Online. From there, because Justin Zoran, who used to run the business side of Magic Online, was leaving, and they needed a right around the V3 transition. Talk about trial by fire. that I took over the business side for Magic Online.
I'm trying to remember if more people threatened to quit and on the transition of V3 than are threatening to quit now. I'm thinking it's about the same number.
It is about the same number. It's about the same number, it feels like, but we're, you know, many multiples of population higher than we were back then. So,
of course.
But yeah.
So when V3 did transition, obviously there were bugs and problems, and there are bugs and problems now. We know this. What were the main things in V3 that you wanted the new version, V4 that's coming out soon? What were the main things you wanted to fix with the new version?
Honestly, one of the biggest things was we just thought there was a lot of ability to, well, V3 was kind of put together, it's been held together with baling wire and duct tape for the last couple of years. It wasn't written in a language that's really conducive to maintenance and upkeep. It's possible to change stuff within the framework of V3, but it's really not easy. And for a lot of the stuff we want to do, we were handcuffed. Like the answer we would get from development a lot of the time on changing stuff in V3 is, well, we can do it, but it's going to take, you know, some number of weeks that's really, really long and just seems ridiculous. So really the upside of I'm not going to even say V4 because we don't refer to it as that, but upside okay. of the new client is that it is eminently more iteratable. I don't think that's a word, but iteratable. You know what I mean? Than the V3 client. I mean, if you guys have problems with the V4 client, even though I said I wasn't going to say it, then that's the kind of thing where we can address, you know, almost all of those things within a reasonable time frame. And I think sort of the malleable nature of the new client is one of its biggest draws. I mean, the new client definitely has some of its own drawbacks. It's more of a lump of clay. It's sort of like an unfinished sculpture where V3 is finished, although it's impossible to change. The current new client is much easier to move stuff around if we decide to do that later on. And, you know, just from now, like reading the feedback that I get into Magic Online feedback at wizards.com, on my Twitter account, you know, through our customer service studies and feedback stuff that we solicit, there's a ton of stuff that's changed, even in the last 6 months, even in the last 2 months, from feedback that has come in directly from the public, where we look at it and we're like, oh, that makes a ton of sense, and we can have the group that's working on the new client change it in a particularly, not easy, but at least we've kind of gotten out of our own way, so at least it's possible to do that kind of stuff.
So it's future-proofed more than anything.
Well, I almost called it that earlier, but I hesitate to say that because it's not future-proofed in the sense that it provides access on platforms beyond the PC. And to me, a truly future-proofed game or product would allow, you know, tablet usage, Mac usage, who knows? Like, there's a bunch of platforms, some of which we didn't even, you know, we probably now in 2014, in 2018, we don't even have a concept right now of what the next platform is going to be. That's how fast technology changes. But to me, a truly future-proofed game would allow, you know, more expansion across platforms because people are just changing the way that they want to play games. When we started this project, I don't even think the iPad existed. If it did, it was brand new, and nobody knew where it was going to go. And like I said, who knows what's going to happen 4 years from now. So we need something that's a little bit, so for the next version, not the one we're about to unleash on the world, but for the next Mint-Go, it's definitely got to be a little bit more, cross-platform focused.
I'm sure a lot of people listening to this just pounded their tables in frustration that this isn't going to be Mac compatible.
Yeah, well, the architecture behind the client is WPF. So by nature, it stands for Windows Presentation Foundation. It is a Microsoft language. So, you know, for now, if you want to play on a Mac, it's going to be Parallels and Bootcamp type stuff or, you know.
Okay. There we go. So obviously there's been a lot of criticism, some fair, some I just don't like it, pointed at what was the beta and is now the new client. Is most of it fair in your mind?
Fair, yeah. I think fair is the right word. I don't like to, I mean, look, everybody's opinion is valid. I don't generally like to engage with some of the stuff that gets nasty. I listen to everything. I read literally every email that comes into that address. I read every tweet that's sent to me. I reply to the vast, vast majority of all of that. And it takes a lot of my time, but it's also the most important thing that I do. I think that I would love to be in a world where you guys all feel like the client, the Magic Online experience, even beyond the client, is something that the community owns, and that you guys are directing, have a true hand in directing exactly what happens when. We're a ways away from making that a reality, but I think that that is the goal for me, because Magic, ultimately, I tell everybody that will listen, Magic is, you know, the best, I think, the best game ever made. I'm potentially a little biased. What's great about Magic is the passion of the community and the game itself. And I think if we can deliver, if we just get out of our own way for the most part, that we can deliver almost all of everything anybody wants, as long as they can log on and play Magic and feel like they're part of a great community. Because Magic, I mean, four of the five groomsmen at my wedding I had met playing Magic. It's changed my life. It's a debt that I can't, you know, repay, really. Yeah. So, and there's tons of people in this building who are the same way. Professional, trained people who have sort of either been here for years or been out in the real world and come back, just because of their love for Magic. So criticism, is it fair? Yeah. Do I wish people kept a little bit more of a level head? Of course, but it comes with a passionate consumer base. I don't know who said it, but like, I remember the quote around the V3 transition was, it's not when they scream that's the problem. It's when there's silence that you know you have a problem. So
yeah,
as long as I come in to work and that email box is full and my Twitter mentions are, you know, in the dozens overnight, I feel like at least we're still trying and you guys still care. So we'll get there.
I mean, Magic players don't complain about anything ever. So, you know, I think, you know, we could sit here for hours. We can't, but we could, and talk about, you know, some of the problems that people have mentioned. But I think one of the biggest ones, and one that has brought the most concern, is the memory and the resource issues, especially for people who stream.
Yep.
I'm sure that's got to be high on your priority list.
It definitely is. Yeah, we you know, it's a double-edged sword. They're moving to a new platform, or moving to a new technology, so WPF from our old one. We're upping the min specs. It's just going to use more memory. So on one hand, you know, we want to be a little bit more to get the flexibility that I talked about. You need to write in the language that's going to offer you the, well, at the time it was the choice to get us the best way to do that. Now, part of it is, you know, dropping support for XP, using sort of the basic Win7 operating system, that those libraries that come along with that OS and that software. That is one of the things that allows us to be as flexible with changes and whatnot as we can, because they're more standardized and they're more modern and current. Microsoft is supporting them, for one, unlike XP. But, you know, there's trade-offs there. That said, you know, a lot of this, I love watching streaming. People will tell you I'm in Kenji's stream all the time. I'm in the Moto Show stream constantly. I'm in that's usually on my off time because that happens at night. There's a couple other streams that I drop into DZY's stream from time to time. I drop into Michael Jacobs' stream from time to time. And lest I be accused of only visiting the ones that are pro-Watsy, the Michael Jacobs stream can be toxic now and then. But Mike himself is a pretty level-headed guy and delivers some pretty constructive feedback. So that said, you know, that screen capture stuff that those guys use is also very resource intensive. Whether you're streaming Magic Online or whatever, the combination of the two is causing problems. I acknowledge that. And so it's certainly at the top of our list to investigate, you know, memory leaks and you know, increased RAM usage over time and that type of thing, even though we are increasing the minimum system spec and the rec spec requirements by quite a bit over V3. We acknowledge that one of the best ways to play Magic Online these days is to either stream or watch a stream. So, yeah, it's certainly near the top of our list. We've got a lot more work to do. In fact, every sprint that we've got scheduled on the software side has, you know, story points attached to continuing putting downward pressure on the memory leak stuff. So.
Well, that's good news to hear. I'm sure that'll help some people
yeah.
pick up. aside from that, what would you say, and I mean, you might not be able to answer this fully, but what do you have left to fix with the new client that you really want to get done?
There's a lot. I mean, there's enough that it's never done. They've done, when I came to work on software in 2008, I threw the word done out the window very quickly, because when you run a game as a service, there's no such thing. And part of, again, to tying back to why I think, you know, this new client is a step forward in a lot of ways, is because it allows us to iterate on feedback and stuff so much easier. So, you know, what's left to do? Tons of stuff. Trading needs a huge overhaul. Whether you're talking about even fixing the system we have needs some work, let alone getting to a world where, you know, we have, I'll use the word auction house, but don't hold me to that long term. What I really mean is automated training, automated offline trading.
Right.
And, you know, that's the type of thing where I would love to be able to do more stuff around that. It's really about, when we turn the V3 off, I know when the increased load comes onto the beta next Wednesday, July 16th, we're going to have some of our own issues that we've uncovered as new. Once we get through the first couple of weeks and get the hot fixes done and all that kind of stuff, I think trading is high on the list for this year. Like I said, the memory stuff is definitely high on the list for this year. There's usability, like sort of basic usability things. We like to call them broken windows here, in the sense that, like, it's, you know, you look, if you're walking by a Lamborghini, a brand new Lamborghini, and it has a broken window, you're like, wow, that's a really sweet car, but the window's broken, so eh. You know, I mean, it's still a Lamborghini, you're not going to turn it down, and I'm not comparing our current clients to a Lamborghini by any stretch, just an example. But there's a lot of things like, you know, this button should be this color or in this spot, or the graveyard should be pop-outable, for example, or, you know, the life total should be bigger, or we need to help streamers out to make X bigger or more visible or make the cards move around less or whatever. That's the kind of stuff where a lot of the focus for the rest of this year, besides delivering leagues, which is still on the plate for later this year, is going to go.
Okay, and leagues is something that that's how I got into Magic Online. I loved playing them, and so knowing that they are on the plate to come back is great news for me, at least. I'm sure I'm not alone there.
Yeah, we've made some really great progress. I think, you know, one of the things that we know we're missing is that the people have changed the way they game over time, and a lot of our customers, especially on Magic Online, are from the world of used to play Magic a ton, had a life change, so it's, you know, graduation and a job or a family and or a kid and they just don't have the time anymore. And they also don't have the time, they have the time for Magic Online, but they also don't have the 3 or something hours that it would take to get into an 8-man draft. They want to play leagues where they have a meaningful match of Magic, and if they only have time for one match, it's in 20 minutes or 30 minutes. And sort of more bite-sized, meaningful chunks, and leagues really provides that in spades. So I'm looking forward to leagues a lot.
Yeah, they were exactly that. And the fact that you felt like you were really building something, and it's not quite sealed, it's not quite constructed, it just felt a lot better.
Yeah, and we've got you know, leagues are going to look like you think they look if you've played them in them before, and we also have a couple pretty few twists that I'll say on the old structure that we're going to throw in as well, and I think you guys will be pleasantly surprised.
Ooh, and of course you can't give us any hints.
No, I can't. Sorry. Yeah. As we get
closer. Okay. But at least we know there are twists coming. That's new. That's great.
Yeah, late this year for leaks.
Okay, awesome. I will keep my eyes peeled. So we're just moving away from the new client for a minute and going to something that I'm sure wasn't any easier for you to deal with. Premier Play on V3 has had its issues. We know this.
Yep.
But there was that one infamous weekend where the mocks crashed, and then the next day a PTQ crashed.
Yep, back in November, yeah.
So presumably because that was the weekend, you were sitting at home. When you found out, can you just talk us through the sort of process there of feelings?
Sure. It's funny you say sitting at home. I wasn't sitting at home. When the PTQ crashed, I was halfway through a movie with my wife. We had a babysitter at home at the time. And so I stepped out into the hallway and never saw the second half of the movie. I don't even remember what movie it was. But she's used to that. And that's part of the deal, you know, running a service business, that's what you're signing up for. I wish that happened less often. Although, to be fair, in the last couple of months, the stability has been pretty good. We've been running some of those mock test events, and all of those have run and completed with no problems. A very, very, very minor problem in one of them, but solved through some of our new tools, which I'll talk about in a second. But sort of the, going back to November, to me it was we kind of knew that we were running a risk, and I think part of the biggest problem that we've got is has been historically a sort of lack of transparency around all of that stuff. We have some plans, and I can't unfortunately get into them too much, to return Premier Play. It is coming back, both in a PTQ form and MOX form. And one of the things that I really pushed my executive team for was to be allowed to be much more upfront with the players to say, hey, look, we know our current platform and tech stack is like this, and it's not perfect, and there's never going to be a system where you play a video game online and don't crash for whatever reason. Some of them are in our control, many of them aren't, and some of them are out of our control. But ultimately, it's the customers are looking at us, and we need to be the ones who own the resolution of the problem. So when you do see PTQs and MOCs come back, and like I said, we'll have some news on that pretty soon, but when you do see that, you're going to see a lot more explanation up front about what it means to join those events, and what we're going to do about it if there is a problem during the event, and some of the new tools that we've been working on, both from a software side and a human side over the last 6 months, or so close to 8 months since the November incident, which, you know, really was just the straw that broke the camel's back for me. I mean, I got to Sunday night and I said, we can't keep doing this. I told my executive team, because we just can't keep putting people through this. We have to figure out what's going on. And so we sort of dug in. Did a little work before the holiday break, and then came back in January and really hit it in earnest and tried to figure out what the deal was. We've got a pretty good sense on what was happening and why now, and what we've done over the last 6 months or so is sort of build out a couple additional tools for our admin level people, so the folks that are running these tournaments, that they have capability beyond what they used to unstick matches, where we used to have things like you'd get to the end of a round and there'd be one outstanding match and it was over, but the system wouldn't pair the next round because it thought that the two people were still playing. So you've got a whole tournament waiting on, you know, you got 800 people waiting on two people who've actually finished their match, but the system won't record it. So we put in a few tools now where we can manually adjust some of those things that are hanging the system up. We can, you know, add time to timers globally. We can, you know, do a couple other things that I'm not going to talk about, but toolbox that's a little bit more robust. And honestly, just having human beings that are watching 24/7 on the most sort of prestigious paper link tournaments. So anything that's sort of got a pro tour invite associated with it, PTQ finals, you know, the MOX finals events, that kind of thing. We're setting up the system a little bit differently. I'm not going to scoop what's the news that's coming, but PTQs and MOX are coming back. MOX is going to look pretty similar, but PTQs are going to look a little different, how we do them online. And then we're going to have real human beings from minute zero till the end of the tournament watching in real time, no matter what time the events are happening, making sure that if we do need to use our new tools, that they have the option and are right there to do so.
Well, that's awesome, and it sounds like you've really put a lot of thought into making sure that, you know, these events do what they're supposed to do, because it's a big time investment.
It is, yeah, and we tried to address that too in our sort of new program design. And again, you'll hear a lot more about it soon, so I'm not going to talk about it too much. But, you know, we realized that, like I said before, people have changed the way they game, and, you know, some events you can't get around the fact that it's got to be, you know, 10 rounds and then a top eight and blah blah, and the whole thing's going to take 13, 14 hours. But I think a lot of other gamers would rather find a way to, you know, the PT invite is the holy grail, honestly. And from being on the PT for so long, I understand what it means to qualify and what it means to be so close and then have it ripped away. There's just no item in the world we can give people other than a PT invite that will, you know, satiate them if we have an issue on our end. So, like, we've sort of redesigned our programs a little bit, taking into account people's time. And again, like I said, being super upfront with what you're signing up for if you choose to enter these events. Like, in a perfect world, yeah, of course, every PTQ, every MOX event that fires, finishes to conclusion and there's no problems. That's just not realistic for where we are right now or maybe ever, like in any online game. So we have to be super clear with our players on what it means. If you do join this event, here's what you're signing up for.
I think people need to realize as well that going to a paper event doesn't guarantee you that there will be no issues. We've had paper PTQs crash and have to be reconstructed from the ground up. We've had GPs do that. So, yes, if you're going to sign up for a Magic Online one, it's different because you have to start over. Your record isn't preserved. There's no backup. Or at least that used to be the case. I'm hoping that's one of the things you guys have fixed. But it doesn't mean necessarily that it's all better in paper. So that's something that people seem to forget sometimes.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't blame people too much, honestly. If I was a customer, if I wasn't working at Wizards, I'd be paying Wizards to play Magic Online, and I'd probably have a lot of the same opinions that you guys share. So, I mean, I get it. I understand what it means to invest 10 hours into something and then have it go up in a puff of smoke. And honestly, that's part of the reason, you know, we got to November, and after the weekend where we had back-to-back crashes in the premier events, I just said enough's enough, and we have to pull these down while we circle the wagons and figure out what's going on. So, you know, announcement coming soon. I can't say too much more about what's happening. I probably said too much anyway, but we'll see. There's next few weeks we'll learn a lot more.
So you still believe taking down all the premier events and paper linked events was the correct move?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're not delivering the experience that we need to our customers. It sucks. It wasn't the decisions that get to my desk aren't generally ever good. Like I have to choose between two options that suck. It stinks, but it's part of the deal, part of the job. I mean, all of the easy decisions, the ones that are obvious, I have smart people who work with me and for me, and those get made, and I don't have to deal with them. The ones that I make generally are ones that have no good answer, and generally both options stink. So it's part of the deal.
Yeah, that's what you get for the job title, I guess, right?
Exactly, yep.
For sure. But, I mean, one of the things that, on a brighter note, you have to feel good about is that we, even with all of the issues and all of the problems and the fact that people are terrified about the 16th, Magic Online, I almost called it the bad name there, is still bigger than it's ever been. So that's got to feel pretty good for you.
It does, and it makes it easier to come to work every day knowing that, you know, I have access to exact data on customer behavior and what people are doing, and oftentimes, very often, people, what they say and what they do not match. So what they say in a public forum, for example, and what they actually end up doing, their play patterns, their behavior, that kind of stuff, they don't match up. I get to see, thankfully, I get to see true behavior on all the customers that play on the system. So, you know, we have had some pretty incredible months. Vintage Masters was, by all accounts, a huge success, this Twitter storm of 20 minutes ago notwithstanding. that I'm going to hop back to as soon as we hang up here. But anyway, you know, by all accounts, a huge, huge success. Made so many people happy. And I've watched stream after stream of people just raving about how fun the format is and, you know, how happy they were to open a Mox Jet or a Lotus or something like that and how nostalgic it all feels. And, you know, you look at that and it's, yeah, we're succeeding because the content of Magic is awesome, and one day, you know, we'll get all the way out of our own way and make it so that Magic Online is a true place that people dream about going to. But even so, right now, like you said, like we're delivering a lot of value to people, or else they wouldn't be playing. I mean, Magic is not a cheap hobby. So I don't know about you guys, but like, if there's stuff that I do that is expensive and sucks for me, I don't tend to do it very long. and so, like I said, regardless of what people are saying, even though I acknowledge that a lot of our success is based on the fact that Magic is awesome, like if it was truly that bad, they wouldn't be playing. That said, I know we have a ton of opportunity to get much, much better.
I like to call it the mbop problem. And that everyone I know denies ever buying a copy of that record, yet somehow it reached number one.
Yeah, no, I unfortunately helped it reach number one. I'll admit it. I'm a pop music junkie, so I make no apologies.
You heard it here first. Worth owns a copy of Mbop. I think that might just get you more hatred than anything else ever.
Yeah, that was a proud moment in my life.
One of the things that people had to say about Pizza Cubes when they did happen, is that the size of them was just intimidating.
Yep.
Is there anything planned to be done about that? Even if you can't give us details, a simple yes or no will be fine.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
That's all I'll say. More details in three weeks or a month or so.
So what you're saying is that PTQs the size of GPs are probably going to be dealt with.
no comment.
No comment is perfectly reasonable answer there.
Yeah.
Speaking of Grand Prix, is Grand Prix Magic Online even remotely possible?
Right now, no, but certainly in the future, it is something I really, really want to do. It's, you know, especially as Grand Prix themselves are also getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's integrating our online play and our offline play is an initiative that has a lot of support here at Wizards, both from my side and the digital side of the business, all the way up through our president and the folks that run the paper side of the business. It's one of the things that sets Magic apart, really. I think one of our competitive advantages and something like that other games, I believe, really wish they could replicate. And I just don't know that, given the 20 years of history of paper Magic and entrenched, you know, thousands and thousands of stores across the world, that anybody could ever really penetrate at this point. You know, obviously, never say never. Like, companies die all the time, 10 years later, whatever. But at this point, we have a very strong paper network and, you know, an increasingly improving digital network. And we're really proud between Magic Online and Duels of the connection between what digital Magic has done, Duels in particular, what that's done for the business overall and the number of people across the world that get to enjoy Magic.
Just please don't invalidate my job as a level 2 judge. It's like, I love going to GPs, so Magic Online is kind of scary.
No plans at all to, no matter what happens in the digital world, I think part of what makes Magic awesome in the paper world is just the face-to-face nature and the community feel of being in a room with 4,000 or 5,000 people who share a passion of yours and also love to be competitive. Like, from a guy who grew up playing chess and sports and whatever, like, it, being a competitor has been in my blood as long as I can remember, and it's just Magic has filled this competitive intellectual brain sport niche for me for so long that, you know, the community around Magic is what makes it great. The game and the community is really what sets us apart.
It's interesting that you say that, because that same community has been known to sort of blame basically everything on you. Now, most of the time it's lightheartedly blaming you when they don't draw the mountain that they need to win the game. But sometimes it's a little more aggressive. Does that ever get to you?
You know what? It doesn't. It very rarely does, I'll say. There have been a few times people have crossed the line. I have a pretty thick skin, and I've been doing community stuff from when I was doing MLB Showdown. I was like the guy in the forums being, so this is 13, 14 years ago. So I've been doing it a long time. Like I said before, when people don't talk, it's more concerning to me than when they do, even if they're being jerks. A lot of times I'll just, you know, I tend not to even block people that are like that. I tend to sort of try to take the high road every time. I fail because I'm human some of the time, but for the most part, I generally try to, you know, just kindness my way out of everything, because a lot of times people just want to feel like they're being, even if they're ranting, they just want to feel like they're being heard. And I understand it, because I would be, you know, I probably would be a little more civil than some of the people, but I would be upset too. And, you know, as long as you don't cross the line, and I'm not going to define where the line is, but you can imagine where people, when you start having to get authorities involved for stuff that people say, that is way over the line. And that's not
Absolutely.
Okay ever for anybody,
no.
Any medium. So, you know, as long as you stay outside of that world, you know, I'm pretty receptive to people, whatever their delivery. Now, that said, constructive delivery is always better, because there have been, I can point to, you know, two or three things just in the last sprint alone, where software developments are known as sprints or whatever. So in the last sprint alone, we've addressed a couple things directly off of feedback from customers. Now, if you come at me and the noise outlasts the signal, I'm going to miss the signal. But if you come to me with a constructive problem and even a proposed solution, a lot of times you're going to get a lot more traction in the long term, for sure. So, you know, it's your right to rant, but it's my right not to listen if I can't find the constructive comments in there.
Absolutely, and I think that's the key point. And you know, like you said, people take magic very seriously because it does engender a lot of passion. I mean, I haven't been shy about saying magic basically saved my life, and I am not alone on that. There's a lot of people who have stories similar to that.
Yeah.
Mark Rosewater just wrote an article on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really touching article. I read that. And two, like, when you've been here as long as me, I've seen kids from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I mean, it still chokes me up to this day. You get kids that could go anywhere, do anything. They could go see Tom Brady or go visit the White House or whatever, and they want to come here and play magic against Mark Rosewater and Aaron Forsythe and get a tour of Wizards. Like, that is really powerful if you think about it, like what that means to people. So
yeah. For sure. But I mean, anytime you put that sort of emotion into a game and it's done that sort of emotional thing for you, it's going to engender some strong responses. So.
And I try to remind myself of that as I'm wading through all of the swearing.
Fair enough. So probably the best part of your job has to be what you can do to troll people when they're streaming, right?
I do enjoy it. I really do. I won't lie. Yeah, on a few of the streams that I frequent, I'm sure you're referring to the times I'll drop a card or two. I try to make them as relevant to the current situation as I can. You know, I think like Kenji, last one I did, Kenji was muttering about blaming me for not drawing a planes when he actually, I'm sure, should have mulliganed, but he was just being greedy. and so I just sent him a copy of a planes or whatever that he can't use in his hand or anything. It just goes into his collection, but it pops up in a little box and
new cards. Yeah.
Yeah. The Twitch chat has a good time with it and it just makes everybody laugh. And so
favorite incident of that was after he lost his winning in at GP Montreal because he couldn't draw a mountain, and then you just show up on his stream and give him the mountain he needed at the GP, which was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, he's a really good sport about it too. I have to say, Kenji has a great attitude on not just on Magic but on life. He's got a long successful road ahead of him, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, he's one of my favorite guys to watch stream. Yeah. You mentioned that sometimes Michael Jacob can be a little abrasive on stream, so I try to avoid him, but Kenji, he's so entertaining.
Yeah, he really is. He's a showman between, you know, the hats and the dancing and the Kermit the Frog and all that other stuff. I enjoy it. And it helps that he's such a good sport.
Yeah. Excellent. So I know you're running a little tight on time, so I've got a few quick-fire questions here to ask you before we wrap things up.
Yep.
First one, we spoke about playing lands in front. Why can't we do this on MTGO?
I believe me, if I had the spare development cycles, that would be on the list. But I just feel so guilty putting that ahead of the million other things that we need to do that I can't justify doing it. I wish I could.
Can you hear Mark Rosewater from your desk?
Thankfully, I cannot. He is an entire, not only up a floor, but basically on the opposite side of the building. So between the concrete and everything else in the distance, I am safe, but just barely.
So is there anyone anywhere near that loud?
Oh, no, thank goodness. I mean, no.
Okay.
Mark is a force of nature. In fact, when I sat in R&D for a long time, my desk, we sort of sit in these, used to sit, I guess they still do, in the, like, four, it's a square, and everybody has a desk at the point of the square. So my cube was Mark Scaff, who many of your readers probably, or listeners don't know who that is, but just imagine like 85 to 90% the volume of Mark, and then Robert Gutierrez, who you guys probably also don't know, but probably 80% the volume of Mark. It was kind of hell on earth sometimes when they would start. If R&D operates like it is a back and forth sort of argument based culture, and I say argument not in the sort of I don't like you argument, but it's a debate. That's a better word, debate based culture. Sometimes the debate, especially with Mark, can get loud. So I invested in a good pair of headphones very, very early.
Excellent. So how often can we legitimately blame Worth, and how often do you have to reprogram the shuffler to screw people?
Oh, my gosh. The shuffler, I promise you guys, it really is random. I don't actually have a room with a lever here that I can pull to screw people or whatever. I wish I did, but again, I can't just by programming the blameworth.exe when we have so much other work to do. it's all as you believe it is, that's how it is. I really, there's no secret lever that I'm going to tell you about anyway.
Okay, so we don't need to ask for the shuffler's long form birth certificate then?
No, it's no. Okay. Born in the U.S.
So during Brock Parker's recent run at the World Series of Poker, somebody yelled out, "Not now, Worth," when he was about to lose a hand. Did you hear about this?
I did, actually. I heard it live because Brock is a friend of mine, and I knew he was deep into the tournament. He ended up winning that tournament, thankfully. But yeah, there was a I forget the exact hand, but there was a hand where I think Brock was ahead before the flop, and then maybe behind after the flop, and then came back a little bit later on down the turn of the river. And as soon as the flop hit the other guy, I hear somebody in the background yell, "Not now, Worth," or something like that. I lost. It was very funny. I know there are a lot of Magic players watching. I actually don't remember who said that, but
Ruben Bressler it was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he the rail for Brock was very large with Magic players. I saw tons of Magic players, and you could see him on the camera. So.
I believe somebody mentioned something about the number of pro points being equal to the number of thousands in chips he had. I don't know, something crazy like that.
Yeah, there was Brock has a couple friends. Brock's an awesome Magic player in his own right, but he has several friends who are amazing, amazing Magic players. Billy Jensen, I think, is probably the best among them.
For sure. Okay, so last question. Will you be playing in the MTGO Community Cup, and will there be epic battles?
Yeah, it's funny you ask that. I got a text from Mike earlier, who was in an events meeting. They're trying to get the team together, and he said, "Do you want to play?" And I said, "Do I want to play? Of course I want to play." So, yes, I will be part of the community team. As far as Epic Beatles, I do not know, but it's certainly a good bet. The events are really fun. I'm thrilled at what the Community Cup has sort of morphed into from the germ of a great idea several years ago to what it is today. I really like the events. One of my favorite times of year, so.
When will the community team be made public? Is that something you can say?
You know what? I probably could if I knew exactly. I know roughly about when, but I'm not sure, and I don't want to scoop the plans that those guys have. So, yeah, I know that they're working on it. So pretty soon, okay. I think.
Excellent. I'll keep my fingers crossed. I know a couple people nominated me, so I'm hopeful.
I actually don't know who from the community side. I know the WOTC team. I don't know the community team all the way. I know a few, but, yeah.
So you know the losing team.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, excellent. Well, Worth, I'm sure you need to get back to preparing for next week. I want to thank you very much for taking the hour today to talk with us and to let us know, you know, from your side how things are going.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Anytime, and hopefully we'll have you back on in a year to tell us how great everything is.
Yes, it's a date. Let's book it for next July.
Gotcha. All right, man, thanks very much. You have a great day.
Yeah, thanks. Take it easy.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. Yes.